and the weather today. Highs of 4 degrees centigrade, lows of 1 degree centigrade. There'll be some sunny spells, but it will be remaining cold. Well, I suppose it is December.
Life is full of sweet surprises. Every day's a gift. The sun comes up and I can feel it lift. My spirit fills me up with laughter, fills me up with song. I look into the eyes of love and know that I belong. Bless us all who gather here.
The loving family I hold dear.
No place on earth compares with home. And every path will bring me back from where I roam.
Bless us all, that as we live, we always comfort and forgive.
We have so much that we can share
with those in need we see around us everywhere. Let us always love each other. Lead us to the light. Let us hear the voice of reason singing in the night.
Let us run from anger
and catch us when we fall.
Teach us in our dreams, and please, yes, please, bless us one and all. Bless us all with playful years, with noisy games and joyful tears.
We reach for you, and we stand tall.
In our prayers and dreams, we ask you bless us all.
We reach for you and we stand tall. And in our prayers and dreams, we ask you bless us all.
Clearly, it's not just Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, that wonderful American situation comedy or drama comedy that actually deals with the challenges of being single or indeed actually desiring to be single. Certainly, it would seem that a recent survey has revealed that actually when it comes to embracing the single life, there is a gender split. Unattached men feel under far more pressure to find a partner and settle down than unattached females. So far, so fine. To address these facts, we're delighted to welcome, first of all, that ace psychologist. It's always a delight to feature Dr. Linda Papadopoulos. How are you, Linda?
I'm great. How are you?
Wonderful. All tickety-boo. And Chris Sherwood, our equally wonderful chief executive of Relate. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning to you.
Linda, let's turn to you first, because clearly we are swamped with images produced by the mass media about the ideal relationship, whatever that happens to be, whatever gender relationship that happens to be. Somehow there is a sense that if you're not in a couple, maybe you're not actually living life to the full. Is that one of the reasons why, in terms of this recent survey that's been put together, that maybe the pressure is actually being held, and 88% of 18 to 24-year-olds are actually reported being lonely compared to just 70% of over 65s?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, I think when you look at behaviour, you need to look at it from various perspectives. From an evolutionary point of view, we're social beings, right? So the need to be within groups, the need to kind of pair up, is something that's, you know, 14 billion years old in our DNA. But then you kind of move to closer times. You look at how we're socialized, right? Everything you see on TV, all the ads, it's always about coupledom. It's always about, you know, holding hands and running across beaches in the sunset. You know, when you go out to buy meal deals from, I don't know, various stores, it's like, oh, meal deal for two. And, you know, it's dine in for two. It's always about this idea that, you know, of what you'll gain. And I think what's interesting is at different times of the year, I think this focus on idealism, whether it's the ideal family or ideal coupledom, I think it comes to head. And I think certainly around this time of year, we see it a lot more. Now, what was interesting to me about eHarmonies.co.uk research was that we found that men actually feel less happy being single than women. Now, this is really counterintuitive, right? Because if you think about it, in our society, commitment, when we look at commitment for women, it's always what they can gain. You know, I'll gain status, I'll tick that box, I'll gain that support. For men, it's always what they can lose. I'm going to lose my singledom, I'm going to lose my identity as a single person. And I think what we're seeing here is a shift, and perhaps that shift comes from the understanding that actually, you know, going back to evolution, we need that person next to us to speak, to connect at a deeper level. And I think that's a big part of why we're seeing the research results that we're seeing today.
Does this relate primarily to the heteronormative scene, or is it something that actually, no matter what your particular affiliation might actually be, you're still faced with a similar kind of pressures?
I think the pressures are across the board. Love is love. You know, whether it's a man that you love or a woman you love, whether you're, you know, same-sex relationship or not. I think the fact of the matter is that as human beings, we are not made to be isolated. I think, so you've got to even think about, you know, how single people relate. A lot of, you know, the great part about being single is actually connecting with lots of other people, right? So when people say, I want to be single, I don't think they're saying, I don't ever want to connect with anyone. I think they're saying, you know, I'm actually enjoying sort of the variety of the connection.
Chris, I was surprised to find that 13% of singles, it's nearly one in eight of those in the East Midlands, say that they feel overwhelmed by the current dating landscape. Is that just a case of there's far too much pressure on this whole system, we can't cope anymore, and maybe it was a lot easier when we actually had all of our relationships arranged for us by the landed gentry?
Well, certainly the village is much bigger today, and the choice available to you is much bigger than it was, you know, certainly even just 10 years ago. And I've been single over the past year, and I've talked about the fact that when I was last single, you know, 10 years ago, it was web-based dating sites, and now it's app-based dating sites. So the market's moved on an awful lot. And in some ways, actually, as a kind of generation of single people, we've lived through the biggest revolution in our relationships ever. The way we find, organise, and even end our relationships has changed significantly from our previous generations. And we're often going through that dating landscape without a roadmap. You know, we're kind of finding out how to do this as we go through. But what we do know that hasn't changed is the importance of relationships. They're central to our well-being, they're central to our quality of life. And that isn't just about romantic relationships with our partner. It's also about our friendships and connections to our family and to our workplace colleagues as well. And whilst the way we find those relationships has changed, the importance of them continues to be paramount in our lives.
And Linda, as we're obviously in the Hanukkah season, we're in the holiday season, we're in the Christmas season, there's all that festivities, happy holidays and so on. Again, quite worrying that a third of singletons admit that actually being surrounded by friends and family in happy relationships actually doesn't make them feel particularly great.
Look, you need to remember we're comparative creatures, right? You know, which is why I guess social media is such a difficult thing, because you go on to connect, but inevitably you compare. And I think in a lot of ways, it's one of the most insidious things, because actually what you need to be doing is finding, you know, the life, the relationship, the job that's right for you, rather than trying to tick boxes. But it's very hard to do when I think we're almost programmed to look to our left, to look to our right, and to measure up. So I think for your listeners out there, I think one of the most important things that they can do is ensure that, you know, the point is finding a good relationship rather than a relationship. And again, that's, I think, what a lot of the research showed that we did at eHarmony, was the idea that people are actually, you know what, if I'm not going to be in a happy relationship, I would actually rather be on my own. And I think Chris was saying something similar from Relate. And I think this is really, I think this is key, because if you wanted to be in a relationship tomorrow, most of us could. The point is that you're in a relationship that enhances your life. And we know, I mean, even if you look at the, you know, not just mental health, but physiological health, if you are in a healthy relationship, then it has a protective function over the way that your body works, over the way that you're, you know, you regulate emotions, all of these wonderful things. So I don't think that this jealousy comes from anything other than this comparison. But I think the big key here is getting the right relationship, having the right type of compatibility, having the right type of affinity rather than anything else.
Are we perhaps programmed to seek too much perfection without realizing that if you're stepping into a relationship, that maybe you need to actually not say, oh, they would be perfect if I could just change so-and-so about them. Maybe we need to kind of give and take a little bit more.
Well, I think we, you know, we have huge expectations around our partner today. You know, the kind of the we're bombarded with these images that our partner is supposed to be this amazing chef, this amazing lover, they're supposed to be our best friend. I think actually one of the things that we know at Relay is it's how we make that relationship work through the life course. And the thing that our therapists, and we have 1,500 Relay counsellors across the country, what they see as the biggest challenge in the counselling room is poor communication and lack of empathetic understanding between couples. And if you can work on anything in your relationship, if you can get that communication right, then other things fall into place. And it's being able to talk about issues that's critical. So what we do in the counselling room is support couples to develop those communication skills and that empathetic understanding so they can talk through the issues that they have and give them the skills to be able to go forward in that relationship.
And as artificial intelligence continues to improve, Linda, do you think we could have a situation in a couple of decades where basically we can have the perfect relationship, it's just not with another human being, it's with an artificial life form?
Well, do you know what? There's some scary things going on in that arena, I have to say. Look, one would like to think that certain X factor of human interaction transcends anything that can be programmed into a computer. Let's hope, you know, that is the case. And, you know, my fear is, though, that because we curate so much of our lives, the music we listen to, the movies we see, the things that we buy, that we don't begin to try and curate each other in the same way. Absolutely, you need to feel, you know, that affinity for someone and, you know, and enrich that compatibility. But this is another human being. There's supposed to be stuff that, you know, that isn't perfect. So I think that kind of road to perfection is a really insidious and dangerous thing.
We just have to go back to see what tragedies were caused by the dying Tamagotchi without sort of knowing anyone. That was in the 20th century. I'm still recovering. And you know, it's just unbelievable. Linda, where can we go to find out further details about eHarmony and so on?
So if you go to their website, eharmony.co.uk, there's some wonderful information, not just about the research we've been speaking about today, but also research in general around compatibility with partners, which would be really useful.
And Chris, in terms of finding out about Relate, best place to go to?
Is our website, relate.org.uk, and we have a whole wealth of resources and information about relationships there. And you can also find your nearest centre. We operate in every single county across England, and we're there to support people both when they're single and looking to find love, and also if they're going through difficulties in their relationship.
It's been a splendid time sharing with your good self. I trust you both had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
It was amazing.
I loved the AI question, actually. What? That was very cool.
It's all put together in the fullest of time. Dr. Linda Papadopoulos and Chris Sherwood, take care, and hopefully we'll speak in 2018. Take care now.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye.
I have friends. I definitely have friends. No one can say that I do not have friends.
And I'm super into Dance Dance Revolution.
Girl with a mustache.
Boy with Port Weinstein.
Janitor who lives in an RV behind the school.
I have friends, I definitely have friends.
Oh yeah, I have friends, I definitely have friends. Objectively, I can say that I have all the friends.
I have friends, I definitely have friends. Friends, friends, friendly friends. Time to meet my friends.
I'm Paula.
Daryl.
Lady who hit your car.
Friend of friend from law school.
Grocery clerk with half an eyelid.
We have friends. We definitely have friends. No one can say that we do not have friends.
We have friends. We definitely have friends. Friends, friends, friendly friends. We have all the friends.
Cool.
Returning to the notion that philanthropy comes from the original Greek love of mankind, it makes sense to actually ensure that the philanthropic nature of business in particular is a key part of our society across the globe. And accordingly, it's the 10th anniversary of Coutts Million Pound Donors Report, in which we see that major donors have been donating £15 billion to charitable causes over the decade. And to address this, and actually sort of just discuss some of the importance factors relating to philanthropy and so on, we're delighted to welcome the director of the Coutts Institute, the fabulous Rachel Harrington. Good morning, Rachel. How are you?
Morning, Alex. I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Rachel, share with us this whole notion of philanthropy. I mean, some people might have only experienced philanthropy because it was what Bruce Wayne actually is in the Batman series. He's a philanthropist. He gives money to good causes and so on. But all the way through, really, I suppose, from the Carnegie Trust, right through, as long as there's been capitalism, arguably, philanthropy has been an important part of ensuring that we put back into society what perhaps we take out.
Exactly. And actually, here in the UK, we've had charity laws since the reign of Elizabeth I. So we've been doing this quite a long time. But over the last 10 years that Coutts has been looking at this major philanthropy, we can definitely say that we're seeing a real boom time in philanthropy now. And I think there are several reasons for that. One is that everyone's talking about it more. It used to be maybe something that you just did on the quiet, or you left money in your will. But now you've got the likes of Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook talking about the giving pledge, how they're going to give away most of their wealth. And what we've been trying to do with this report is to tell the story of philanthropy more and encourage more people to give.
Is it a case of actually realising that at the end of the day, we're one human race, we're on a small planet, and it is important, not necessarily just thinking about legacy, because that's clearly one of the other aspects where you might sort of think people want to leave a legacy behind them, they want to ensure that their name resonates through the generations and so on. But is it a case of actually just saying, well, actually it's a way of offsetting the stuff that we're doing?
It's interesting, because when you've met one donor, you've met one donor. They all have completely different, very personal motivations for giving. And we've tracked donations from individuals, from companies who are doing it as part of their relationship with their community and their staff, and also corporate foundations. And in the report, we've interviewed 12 really interesting philanthropists who all talk about, you know, what's driven them to give. So Rory McIlroy, the golfer, recognizing that he had a very privileged upbringing in many ways. He didn't want for anything. He could focus on his golf, so he wants to give something back to children who didn't have those opportunities. Or Sir Terence Conran, the design legend, who says, you know, I want to encourage and inspire and support the next generation of designers who are going to contribute a huge amount to the UK economy.
And are there any major trends that we can actually see? I mean, clearly you would have to have been well out of any financial notion whatsoever not to appreciate that there was a bit of a crisis at the early part of this century in terms of banking and so on. Have we seen a kind of increase since then? Are there parallels that we can draw with, shall we say, the Wall Street crash of the 1920s?
It's interesting that corporate philanthropy has absolutely boomed in the last 10 years. It's gone from 50 million the first year we looked at this to half a billion recently. And I think that is about businesses really looking at what their role is in society, thinking about what their staff want and what their customers want. But on the flip side, at Coutts, you know, every day we're seeing families really wanting to get their children involved in giving. It's a way of talking about money. It's a way of getting them involved. And actually, you know, as we've seen from the success of Children in Need recently, you don't have to be wealthy to get involved as a family and feel good about giving. And I also think it's not a binary choice anymore. It's not about I make money and then I give it away. People are being very thoughtful about how they run their businesses, how they invest their money, how they volunteer their time, and which businesses they shop from, which is really exciting.
Rachel, looking at your own curriculum vitae, a trustee of Philanthropy Impact, a member of the advisory board for the Centre for Sustainable Philanthropy at the University of Plymouth, a member of the advisory board for the Environmental Funders Network's Expanding Environmental Philanthropy Programme. Trips off the tongue so easily, but it's good stuff. But Rachel, in terms of that, are we seeing a case of there is a generosity here? Does it actually give you a positive feeling about humanity when clearly in the area that you're working within and also as director of the Coutts Institute, there are signs that actually, yeah, we might have a lot of moans and groans every so often, but, you know, there are some good things about this human race.
There are indeed. It's an incredibly exciting and rewarding area to be involved in. And I think another reason that philanthropy is going up is around the role of advice. That's what Philanthropy Impact is all about, and what my job is at Coutts is to help families give in a way that they enjoy and that is really rewarding. And research shows that when people get good advice on their giving, they give more. It's actually very difficult to give away £1 million effectively, because there are 166,000 plus charities in this country. Yeah. So trying to figure out how you can make a difference can be quite tricky. But when you get there, it really is a sort of magic moment.
The Garden Bridge project in central London had 10 donations. That sort of stepped to one side. I mean, was that one of the cases where clearly you do have to monitor that things are going to the right cause and the right place and so on?
Well, partly, but I think that one is actually more an interesting example of the role that philanthropy can play as risk capital. And a lot of the donors that we interviewed for this report talked about that, and so do a lot of our clients, that yes, of course, philanthropy is there to perhaps fund services that government can't, you know, for, you know, homeless shelters or for women's refuges. But it can also, you know, be that seed money to try out new things and try out new ideas. And sometimes not everything will work out, and that's okay. It's all part of the learning journey as you sort of go along your philanthropy journey.
And certainly there is that notion that clearly British folk are generally very generous, but there is that sense that somehow, should this money be provided by central government or other sources? Should we be providing this and so on and so forth. We won't go into that argument now because we'd be here for several days, I think, if we were developing that particular line. Let's talk about the regions in terms of, are there any particular areas of the United Kingdom that you actually say, well, they always donate substantially in the northeast of England or wherever?
Well, it's hardly surprising that London and the South East is really the hub of philanthropy, but that's because that's just where the headquarters of many big businesses are. But what's really encouraging and exciting is that over the 10 years, we've seen gifts coming from every single region of the UK. You know, of course, you know, it's a bit unpredictable from year on year, but the North East has seen a really consistent rise, and the Midlands and Scotland, in fact, had their best year last year in 2016. So there's clearly an appetite for businesses and families locally to be supporting work in their local area.
And can these obviously be tied in with general confidence about the economic outlook? Or, I mean, I dread to mention the B word, Brexit, but I have done. are there sort of feelings that, well, it could all collapse in a couple of years' time?
I think at the moment it's simply a case of we don't know. Obviously, there's a lot of talk in the charity sector about what the impact might be, but fundamentally there are needs today and there will still be needs tomorrow. So, you know, philanthropy will keep going and people will focus on, you know, the things that they're passionate about or concerned about and interested in.
Allowing for the notion of egalitarianism and equality and no taxation without representation, is there a response to the criticism that philanthropy, it's just a way of dodging tax?
Actually, I think, you know, we're very lucky in this country that we have generous tax reliefs that encourage and enable us to give more. You know, all of us who donated to Children in Need recently, I'm sure, will have been filling in our gift aid forms so the charities get more money. And certainly in my experience, you know, the tax reliefs are fantastic, but they're never the primary reason that people give. It's always about the thing that they're passionate about or that's keeping them awake at night. And as you said earlier, it's what's the legacy that I want to leave in the world? And the tax reliefs can be a great way of actually helping people to give more than they thought they could.
Rachel, where would you point people online or in the great, wonderful internet, etc., to find out more details about philanthropy or indeed the Coutts Institute?
Well, you can read the full report and all those inspiring interviews I talked about online at coutts.com. And you can join in the conversation on social media as well using the hashtag #MillionPoundDonors.
Rachel, it's been a pleasure connecting with your good self today. Have you had a reasonably interesting and philanthropic telephonic link with us today? Has it been okay with your good self?
That's been great. Thanks, Alex.
Well, hopefully we can provide upon you, good self, to join us again in 2018. Will you be kind enough to come back and keep us appraised of the excellent work that you do as Director of the Coutts Institute?
I will indeed.
For free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money. That's what I want. That's what I want. That's what I want. Your love gives me such a thrill, but your love won't pay my bills. I want money. Everything, it's true. What it don't get, I can't use. I want money.
To the Midweek Drive on Siren FM, guaranteed to keep you safe from giant lizards.
And I suppose Lucasfilm is making a fair amount of money in the fullest of time, and probably will continue to do so with Walt Disney, 20th Century Fox, and various other factors. I'm sure Starburst will be taken over as well before too long. What say you, Ed Fortune, literary editor extraordinaire?
Starburst taking over? What?
Bit of a bombshell at 26 minutes or 27 minutes past 9 a.m. on a Thursday morning, but what the heck?
I think the only thing that's capable of taking is over our giant lizards, and apparently I'm proof of those now, so that's fine.
Precisely. The world's longest-running magazine of cult entertainment. 40 years, I hold in my hand the Starburst anniversary issue, and indeed shared that, being a good soul, with our special guest this morning, Steve Sharp, ace musician and drummer, who has... yet to see a Star Wars movie in your life, Steve. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm still apologising for it.
Sometimes just silence reveals volumes, Ed. But never mind. That's...
It's an odd thing to apologise for, because ultimately they're just movies. I think I've never seen Star Wars. It's kind of like the new I Do CrossFit or I'm a Vegan sometimes. Like, I've never seen Star Wars. And it's like, and yes, that's lovely. Maybe take the time. Right. They're quite fun. But, you know, I've never been skydiving. That's
I see. I've been skydiving.
You see. You went skydiving instead of watching Star Wars. Fair
I did.
Enough.
It takes
you've
a lot
got
of planning.
2 hours. Yeah. You've got a spare 2 hours. Yeah. Go and see Star Wars. You know, it's out there.
Wonderful. Let's start with the and finally, because I feel it's only wonderful that Starburst would like to wish everyone who participated in NaNoWriMo, that's Nini NaNoNoNoNoNo, no, not Saturday Night is All Right for Dancing, NaNoWriMo this year, the best of luck. Share with us, actually, Ed, what is NaNoWriMo all about?
So it's National Novel Writing Month, which was last month, November, and it's been going for about 10 years, I believe, at this point. The point of National Novel Writing Month is to just get people to write. Now, by national, they mean American.
So it's all right. We've a burst of various other things coming through there. Don't worry. It's okay. We're safe.
And then they stood on some music there. it's for encouraging people to go out and write. They mean America by national, but it's become really international, but that doesn't sound right. So it's NaNo rather than NaNo or whatever it would be. A lot of books have been created and have been published because people have used November as their way of getting started. Now, in the United Kingdom, November's not a very good month to kind of start writing, because writing is kind of isolating and brings you in yourself. But, you know, you've got to start at some point, so you might as well start then. Chuck Wendig, who, oddly enough, has written a great many Star Wars novels, does a great thing on his website called Terrible Minds, I believe it's called, and he talks about the fact that October should be a National Planning Your Book Month and December should be National Editing Your Book Month. And that's good advice in general. What publishers tend to find around about February is they get a great wave of stuff submitted to them, because people write stuff over Christmas, start with NaNo, carry on over the Christmas, and by January, February, they think they're ready to submit. Normally, they're not. But that said, some amazing stuff has come through NaNo projects. So, you know, can't really... I mean, I might be wrong, but I seem to recall that stuff like The Copper Promise and Under a Pendulum Sky, both very good books, both started life as a NaNo. I might be horribly wrong there, but I'm pretty sure that they're the sort of books that started life by someone just getting that push to write a little bit more.
It's just one little drop in the ocean, but it helps. And I can actually share with you, Ed, some very exciting news about Telefantasy and Society 3 that we've just begun to start putting together for 2019. Yeah, I know, I haven't even gone through 2018 as yet, but that looks as though it's going to happen. We're putting a whole range of things. We value your inputs to this, because we will be actually running a flash fiction competition with respect to that, because the theme will be 60 years
since the Twilight Zone emerged into the consciousness of life and so on, with Rod Serling's final trip between the summit of man's hopes and the pit of his imagination. So there we are, just a little nudge there to which hopefully we'll talk more about. I mean, I feel in many ways it's going to be even more exciting. Oh no, equally as exciting. Well, perhaps not. It's a Starburst 40th anniversary, 60 years of the Twilight Zone, and we'll hopefully be at the University of Lincoln doing things to actually coordinate that, including a flash fiction competition.
Well, 2019 is a good year for that sort of thing. Worldcon, it will be happening in Dublin later that year. Yep. So, and it's just, you know, it's just a short trip.
Exactly, so, exactly. So, you know, we haven't set a month as yet, but because obviously we've got 50 years since Neil Armstrong set foot on the moon as well. But, you know, somewhere between those things, good things will be happening. Much like the Trials of Morrigan Crow in Nevermore is going to be adapted by 20th Century Fox by the same team responsible for The Martian, which I gather, according to Richard Fitzwilliams earlier this morning, was actually put forward as best comedy. It's not a comedy. You know, it's just not a comedy, The Martian. It's, you know, you might have a smile at some of the lines there, but it's not a comedy. Sorry, I'm just letting that go through there. Are you a fan of Nevermore? Is this something which maybe, as he's kind of not never got into Star Wars, maybe Steve could actually say, I should be checking out The Trials of Morrigan Crow?
Maybe?
Yeah, maybe. This could be up to you, Ed. What can switch that maybe into, yeah, I'm going to find out what The Trials of Morrigan Crow is all about.
Excellent kids' books. They're great fun. I'll absolutely rip through them. And they kind of have been touted as an equal to the kind of the Harry Potter stuff, but then that's every children's fantasy book since Harry Potter. They are great fun. They totally deserve the adaptation that they're going to get very soon, so that should be really cool. But that said, there's an absolute shedload of fantasy adaptations coming. As we all know, Christopher Tolkien recently retired, which means that we're going to get more and more Lord of the Rings, more and more Middle-earth stuff. This is Christopher Tolkien standing there going, no, anymore. So it's all change, really.
It's just wondrous material, that's all. Wondrous material that's clearly coming through. And that, you can find out more details about the latest news from the world of genre literature by going to the Brave New Words column in that awesome magazine, the world's longest running magazine of cult entertainment, Starburst. Have you seen the Star Wars Last Jedi movie as yet, Ed, or is it a case of no? I'm saving that until it comes onto DVD.
I am not saving it until it comes onto DVD, but I am saving it until I get a chance to see it with friends.
Nice.
And because we've all been running around with Christmas, doing all sorts of Christmassy things, including various productions of Christmas shows, because it's that season right now. We've all been shockingly busy, so we've got the Brave New Words podcast crew. I've got an evening on Saturday booked to sit and watch the movie.
It's just so wonderful. It's rather like sort of opening with the voice of Rachel Atkins talking about the elf Vale Moonwing having a chance encounter on the road and being appropriately brave and defiant. I quote once again from the words of Ed Fortune in his review of Warlock of Firetop Mountain, the hero's quest.
Blimey, it's a good production. That is actually a lot of fun. And who would have thought that Warlock of Firetop Mountain could be used to create kind of fun, sport standard fantasy, but also be massively entertaining.
Exactly. I mean, I was quite frankly shocked, and it's the only way we could actually have to actually go to the ambassador of the People's Postcode Lottery, Fiona Phillips, who's going to be talking about Good Samaritans. I thought the best way to lead this through was Warlock of Firetop Mountain, The Hero's Quest. It's been awesome, even though at times it sounded as though you were speaking to us from a galaxy far, far away in all manner of routines, and we were just, you know, they're not the droids we're looking for. These aren't the droids you're looking for. No. Oh, it's back to the classic line, etc. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Ed Fortune, literary editor of the world's longest running magazine of cult entertainment, Starburst?
I have indeed.
That's the next question, Steve.
Will you be back again?
Good one.
I almost certainly will.
That's what we like to hear. He will return. Yeah, he will return. Yay!
spaceman came traveling on his ship from afar. 'Twas light years of time since his mission did start, and over a village he halted his craft, and it hung in the sky like a star. Just like a star. He followed a light and came down to a shed where a mother and child were lying there on a bed. A bright light of silver shone round his head, and he had the face of an angel. Spoke. He said, "Do not fear. I come from a planet a long way from here, and I bring a message for mankind to hear." And suddenly the sweetest music filled the air.
Joy with a growing family, every girl and boy will be nephew and niece to me.
Nephew and niece to me.
We'll bring love, hope, and peace to me.
Love, hope, and peace to me.
Yes, and every night will end, and every day will start with a grateful prayer and a thankful heart. With an open and smile, and with open doors I will bid you welcome. What is mine is yours, with a glass raised to toast your health.
With a glass raised to toast your health.
And a promise to share the wealth.
Promise to share the wealth.
I will sail a friendly course, file a friendly chart, on a sea of love and a thankful heart. Life is like a journey, who knows when it ends? Yes, and if you need to know the measure of a man, you simply count his friends. Stop and look around you, the glory that you see is born again each day. Don't let it slip away. How precious life can be. With a thankful heart that is wide awake, I do make this promise every breath.
Ah, yes,
I
a wonderful thankful heart with Scrooge. Now the question is, given that this is a live piece, will we be able to connect with producer Rachel Abbott and the awesome Fiona Phillips? Let's hope they are actually listening and opening. Are you actually there, folks? Fiona Phillips, are you set and ready to talk to us? Oh, genius, genius stuff, Fiona. We knew you would be. We were in the midst of just a little bit of behind-the-scenes info. We were doing a previous piece with another radio station. We thought, yes, fine, we need to go on. Time, etc., etc. Fiona, a delight as ever to connect with your good self. We talked about the notions of Good Samaritans and a variety of things within this whole field. It's People's Postcode Lottery that's released this research today. And again, it's one of those moments where I think we tend to sigh. 61% of Brits say they value the work local charities do, but nearly a third of us simply don't know how to give a helping hand. This is not good.
It is not good, but you can help. Well, you can help a hand, I was just about to say. You can lend a helping hand by finding out who your local charities are. There's one in your area, actually, a brilliant charity called Lives. So they have they've set up this brilliant cycle response affair. So hang on, where is it? I just had it here.
It's very, I mean, Lincoln Lives is something which me and my students have got involved with. It's a very worthwhile scenario and well worth accessing from that perspective. I mean, in terms of, I say, looking at the breakdown, I say young people between the ages of 16 to 25 are most enthusiastic to do their part. Nearly 2 in 5 saying they want to do more. Over half of those over 55, though, believe they already do enough. Can you ever do enough, Fiona? I mean, there's always more we can give.
And do you know what? I'm surprised at that, because over 55, you're getting into the area as well. When you get sort of 75, nearly half of 75-year-olds are living alone, and loneliness is a huge problem. And I think, you know, what better way to maybe combat that loneliness is to get out every day and try and help someone if you can get out, if it's possible for you to get out. By helping other people, it's a two-way relationship. You know, you get out of the house and do something worthwhile, and the charity that you're going to, especially the small local charities, will so value your donation. And talking of donations, obviously there are lots of local charity shops on the street, so you can help out just by donating things, maybe unwanted Christmas presents come January, but also by donating your time. They need people to man these shops all the time. There are all sorts of ways you can get involved in local charities, and they are so important. And if you don't know who your local charity is, then pop onto your local council website, and they have all the local charities listed there. And if you go online and search hashtag Local Charities Day, you can find out more via Twitter as well. So.
Always important. Now, Fiona, in the studio, we have an ace drummer called Steve Sharp. Steve was beside himself with joy and happiness when he saw you were on our running order to this morning's show. So it's all great. I mean, it is the Fiona Phillips. Steve, thoughts and questions from yourself?
To be honest, it's made me feel a little bit guilty, because it's made me realise that I probably don't do enough myself, and I'm obviously a very busy person, but as is everybody else.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, you've sort of like stricken me with guilt a little bit.
Listen, where you live, there must be some older people who you don't see very much, and I think that we're scared to go and knock on people's door because we think they won't want to see us, or they'll be scared, or they'll be... But, you know, I think that's a really simple thing people can try. If they haven't seen an older person on their street for a while, or, you know, it's awful being lonely. And they would welcome a friendly face. They might be scared initially, Steve, but I'm sure you're a very attractive young man, so they might have...
Oh, you flatter me.
There are all sorts of ways that you can offer yourself to local charities. Any skills you have, it's your time and your skills that they want. So.
And it's certainly something that I've noticed, Fiona, that actually the prognosis is pretty good. I mean, I know we sometimes have a downer on the human race and what we actually do, but ultimately the work that you're doing is ambassador for the People's Postcode Lottery. And it brings a smile to people's face. It is important. I mean, the quote that was sort of led with this, you know, Winston Churchill, we make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give. And that is so true.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And that's what gives you the most joy yourself in the end as well. When you've done something that makes someone smile, that I can't walk, but I mean, in London at the moment, there are so many homeless people on the streets, and I empty my purse out every single day. I can't walk past those people. I met a 21-year-old gorgeous young man just yesterday at Oxford Circus. He was in London, which is a big hub, you know, people just milling past him. And he'd been in care since he was 14 years old. And, you know, he's passed around from family to family to family. And now he's just on the streets because he's had enough of that. So, you know, I think people think, oh, well, they've clearly got an alcohol problem, you know, and walk past or... got an alcohol problem, there'll be something that has caused that in the first place.
It's always dangerous to make these presuppositions and assumptions and so on. A reminder, of course, Local Charities Day, hashtag Local Charities Day for social media and so on. We'd certainly encourage folks to get out and about, do that, as Fiona said, get involved with the whole piece from that perspective. Quite freely would admit that at the end of the day, there was no finer presenter ever on breakfast television than Fiona Phillips. I mean, even Eamon Holmes would have acknowledged that, and he's a Manchester United supporter, so that's bottom line.
I support Chelsea, so he would never have acknowledged that.
Well, yeah, listen, I'm a Man City fan, Fiona, so let's not get started. You know, it's just, Fiona, it's Man City. We're never safe. I mean, back in the day, who knows what could happen
really
on that basis.
Wait till Pep goes, then
you'll experience it. It's been a delight as ever touching base with yourself. We've got two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I really have. Thank you. And it's been lovely to speak to that lovely Steve in the corner or wherever he is.
Oh, it's been lovely to speak to you too.
That is his official title actually with us at Siren Radio. It's the lovely Steve who sits in the corner. So it's great. It's a wonderful cat. And you've got the lovely Rachel, producer, in the corner there. It's just wondrous all the way around. Happy holidays and hopefully we'll speak in 2018.
Yeah, lovely to speak to you. Thank you.
Your family, your neighbors and your friends, may all your days be happy with the joy that never ends. May peace and love surround you at Christmas time and all the whole year through. I'm looking out my window at the softly falling snow that dances in the early morning light. I got my guitar right before me, strumming a beautiful sound, watching it coming down all around. And the fields and the farms and the road to town, and I'm thinking up a letter that I'm writing in my head. Christmas card to all the folks I love, instead of letting the postman bring it, I decided I'd rather sing it, especially for you. Your family, your neighbors and your friends, may all your days be happy with the joy that never ends. May peace and love surround you at Christmas time and all the whole year through.
And
as we look at seasonal trends and such like, from sporting seasonal sparkle to being secret slobs. New research has actually revealed our festive fashion choices. One in five of us actually wear PJs, yes, pyjamas, perhaps onesies as well. Loungewear, even a, yes, say the dreaded onesie on a big day. 16% have, however, prefer to cozy up to a Christmas in a classic Christmas jumper. And as this research has been released to mark Save the Children's annual Christmas Jumper Day tomorrow, Friday the 15th of December, who better to get to speak about the fabulous annual Christmas Jumper Day than the amazingly talented soul from Save the Children? That would be wonderful. Helena, how are you, Helena?
Hello, good morning. I'm very well, thank you. I'm very excited about the big day tomorrow. It feels like Christmas already for me.
Well, it does really. I mean, Steve in the studio here, I think, Steve, you got your Christmas jumper all lined up for tomorrow, presumably?
I've actually got it in my bag, yeah. You see, just in case it was today.
In case he got stuck at work, stuck at Siren Radio, stuck at the University of Lincoln, he's got his ready to wear overnight on that fact.
I'm glad to hear it.
That's the thing. So talk us through, Helen, talk us through the importance of this, and obviously how Save the Children can benefit from this annual, it's almost like the official start of Christmas with the annual Christmas Jumper Day.
Well, that's right. It does feel like the official start of Christmas, as you rightly point out, and it's our sixth year doing Christmas Jumper Day. So for us, it is our key point on the calendar, and it's a really important campaign for us. Obviously, it's loads of fun, not only for us, but for everybody else taking part. And last year, we saw over 5 million people up and down the country take part. So we hope to see just as many, if not more, taking part this year. And it's such a simple ask, you know, pay your £2, sign up to christmasjumperday.org and put on a festive sweater. And for us, the money is incredibly important. Last year we raised over 4.3 million, which is obviously a huge amount of money for us, which is fantastic because it enables us to do work with the most vulnerable children in the most difficult circumstances. All over the world, and as you can probably appreciate, it's absolutely freezing today, but we're lucky enough to put on our coats and get into a heated office or a heated home, but actually there's plenty of people that aren't in that situation. I was only in Jordan visiting some of our refugee work in Zatari refugee camp a couple of months ago, and it was freezing then, and they are there in these sort of metal shipping containers with minimal heat, and in the summer it's boiling, but in the winter it's absolutely freezing. These children are out of school as well, so the work that we do enables us to provide them with the right kind of support, from educational needs to psychosocial, to obviously heating and basic supplies where we can. So it's incredibly important.
We were just talking to broadcaster Fiona Phillips about the importance of obviously caring for folk at Christmas and looking at lines for that and doing things, getting involved with local charities and so on. And this is a wonderful opportunity that you've provided for us, Helena, in terms of, you know, how folk can actually work on an international level to actually get involved with Save the Children.
Yeah, exactly. Whilst we are a British charity, obviously we work in 120 countries, so our whole ethos is reaching those children that are the hardest to reach, and sometimes those forgotten children who are more often than not based in the poorest communities in the poorest countries. So for us, it's really about reaching those that haven't been reached before.
So what is your particular personal favourite festive jumper choice? Are you a classic gal who actually looks the sort of minimal sort of approach, etc.? Are you looking for the tree, perhaps? Are you looking for the full Santa scenario? Are you looking for a kind of humorous media approach? I mean, what will you be wearing tomorrow, Helena? Or is it a case of top secret? I haven't decided yet.
Well, you know, I actually change, because I've got so many, I change my mind all the time and actually every year. And
it should be Christmas jumper day every day.
Second I know, it should be. It should be. Last year, I think I was wearing a snowman with a protruding carrot nose, which was a little bit novelty and naff and sophisticated and cool.
And potentially inappropriate in certain circumstances, I have to say, Helena. But, you know, I don't think I'd go. I don't think I'd go for the protruding nose myself, not in the current climate.
Yeah, I mean, depending how you view it. But for me, I think this year I'm going to go a little bit sophisticated because we've done a partnership with a lovely clothing brand called Selfish Mother. And we worked with a whole tranche of very lovely celebrity supporters to design their own slogans on the jumper. And 50% of the sales of the jumper goes to Save the Children. So what better reason to buy one? My one says festive on it in gold, which is a lovely jumper. So I think I'm going to do sophisticated.
Genius. And Steve, do you get a chance to sort of reveal what we will be seeing tomorrow around the streets of Lincoln?
Well, to be honest, I've been wearing mine since the 1st of December.
I have
anyway.
Noticed this, exactly. So it's going to be consistency in terms of the festive.
I think so, yeah.
Well, that's okay. That's
I just wanted to bring up a point that I got all my Christmas jumpers from charity shops as well, and they are brimming with them. So instead of, like, if you're not going to the Save the Children charities, maybe go to your local charity shop.
It's a virtuous circle, but I'd still say Save the Children is well worth promoting for all the reasons we've actually just said. Can you remind us once again, Helena, in terms of how people can actually donate those £2 and make sure they can connect with the Save the Children Fund and, of course, tomorrow's official Christmas Jumper Day?
Of course. So it's very simple. You can sign up online at christmasjumperday.org. Or you can call our jumper headquarters, as we like to call them, on 0808-281-1031, or more simply, you can text donate to 750, and that's the opportunity to donate £5. So a bit more than a £2 sign-up, if you would like to.
Helena, it's been absolutely sensational, as we knew it would be. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning? Has it been okay for
you? It's been wonderful. Thank you so much for giving me the time to talk to you all about it.
Well, will you be kind enough to come back in 2018 and keep us appraised of how Save the Children are doing and more as well?
I would absolutely love to.
Helena Wiltshire, shortly going to be heading towards sainthood. We salute you. Take care now. Have a great day.
And thank you.
So we thank Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Fiona Phillips, Ed Fortune, Linda Papadopoulos, Rachel from Coots Bank, and you, dear listener, of course, for being part of the whole thing. Steve Sharp and Shayla McKenzie too. Steve, did you enjoy your programme?
I really did. Thank you very much.
Well, that's it. The news is coming up. And then a whole heap of other goodies on Siren Radio. Avicii featuring Rita Ora takes us out. All we have to say is happy holidays. One, two, three.
Happy holidays.
Before the rush to my blood, rush to my chin, we fly like.